Thursday, October 27th. I woke early in the Manila Hotel. We were going to leave this morning. This was scheduled to be our day of rest in Bang San, Thailand. And from the very beginning, it was an offbeat day. We'd struggled valiantly to keep to the schedule. We had nearly all the time. Today, not so. Lyndon kept on being tied up with telephone calls and conferences. Once, I talked to Lucy. Once, when there was a lull, I asked him to talk to Dr. Chandler. Our visit there had been telescoped, shortened, so that we could get on to Corregidor and then to Vietnam for Lyndon. And we had left in unseemly haste, not staying for the lunch they had prepared so beautifully for us. Lyndon had been more impressed with it than nearly anything we'd seen on the trip. And so many hopes for progress rode with this. And I wanted him to talk to Dr. Chandler a minute and thank him. Actually, what he said was to me our whole visit to Asia in a nutshell. In a cheery, rather casual voice, after the amenities and warm thank yous, he said, "Well, Dr. Chandler, you just keep on inventing better strains of rice. And Margaret Sanger's folks keep on doing what they're doing. And we'll save this old world yet." Finally, a little past 11, we left for the airport, riding for the last time under the great arches that covered the ceremonial avenue, each one welcoming a different chief of state. President and Mrs. Marcos were awaiting us at the airport, along with most of the top-ranking people of the country, Chief Justice and the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate and the Vice President and the Secretary of Foreign Affairs and a coterie of Mrs. Marcus's blue ladies. Most of them had been out here since early morning. I felt so bad, so I tried to be all the more expansive in my expressions of thanks. Many of those waiting were U.S. Embassy employees who had been disappointed yesterday when Lyndon went on to Vietnam instead of making an appearance at the embassy. There were no speeches, but there were full honors. At the head of the steps, I turned and waved and blew a kiss to the crowd. President and Mrs. Marcos accompanied us inside the plane for a last private word. They are a most remarkable couple, this chief of state and his first lady. And then at 12, it was wheels up for Thailand. It was nearly a three-hour flight to Sattahip Air Base, and we were accompanied in by sharp-nosed F-105s, three on each wing, were camouflaged in green and brown. We landed in a drizzle, and Prime Minister Kittikachorn, with whom I've come to feel quite at home, it was only night before last that we said goodbye at Malakanyang Palace, informed us that rain, from the Thai point of view, is an auspicious omen. We assured him that it was in Texas always. Our ambassador and Mrs. Martin were also there to meet us. We waved to the small crowd that had gathered, some American troops. Then we got in a helicopter and flew low over the fascinating countryside, 40 miles to Bang San. We saw orange-roofed Buddhist temples and monasteries and coconut palms and an oil refinery. The Prime Minister was very proud of that. And fields of some sort of crop I couldn't identify. There would be white flat areas rather like a tennis court. And farmers were obviously spreading out this stuff to dry. Else they were mounding it up in little white piles. I asked, "What is that?" The Prime Minister Kittikachorn says, "That's tapioca." I burst out laughing and said, "Here's your best customer." He told me that it grows as a root, and it's one of the staples of their diet. They make a sort of a stew out of it with pork and put in a few vegetables. It's the main dish in the homes of most peasants. It can also, of course, be made into a dessert. Our helicopter landed on the beach close to the Lam Than guest house, the Prime Minister's summer residence. Bang San is a seaside resort which nestles between the wooded hills and the picturesque curving bay. There are resort cottages overlooking the gulf, many of them used by Thai officials and wealthy people looking for escape from the heat of Bangkok. Mrs. Kittikachorn was here to welcome us, and I was presented with a garland of jasmine, white and rose and wine and apricot and yellow, in the precise formal pattern made from a million tiny petals. Smelled so sweet. The house could have been in Florida or California. It was low and rambling and white and very open, and the grounds were beautiful with palms and bougainvillea and tropical flowers and a lovely assortment of orchids. There were verandas and terraces, and right beside us the Gulf of Siam, the waters lapping right at the edge of the lawn, and some enormous picturesque boulders strewn along the beach. All the time that we were there, we could see a ship plying in a path just a little offshore. Up it would go and then back. It took a while to dawn on me this is a United States ship, a sort of an honor guard because of our presence. After all the proper hospitable expressions, the Prime Minister and Mrs. Kitty Kachon left, and Lyndon went up to rest. But this was the most personal day I had had on the trip, the closest to the countryside that I had been, and I was not about to waste one minute of it. Mrs. Martin asked what I would really like to do, and so I told her. I'd like to get in a car and drive around, perhaps with somebody who could speak Thai. Would love to have her if she'd care to go, but didn't want to dragoon her. Yes, she could supply the person who could speak Thai, Mrs. Murchie, the wife of our AID man there. And Ashton went with us. So the four of us set out in a car for a ride around Bang San. It's an old village with houses made of teak standing on their stilts in the edge of the water. And lots of little stores selling coral and straw hats. And spirit houses everywhere. Those brightly decorated little houses, pink, blue, elaborately ornamented, about the size of a birdhouse, standing on stilts, one beside every residence nearly. These are to entice the spirits to take for their own and leave your own house to you. We passed a schoolhouse. It, too, could have been in any southern part of the United States. Long and low and open to suit the hot country, it was recess, and there were dozens of children, probably 6 to 10 years old, running around, squealing, the girls dressed in navy skirts and white blouses, the boys in navy pants and white shirts, all the world, it seems, except us, wear uniforms to the public schools. They were as merry and lively as children anywhere. I went over the fence and tried to talk to them. They gathered around, curious, and one of them did say, "Hello." Our car wound its way to the top of the hill, almost a mountain, thick, almost jungle vegetation, flew right up to the roadside on each side. Down below us were the orange tiled roofs of Buddhist temples and the row of little teak houses following the waterline. I asked the driver to stop. I'd like to get out and use my movie camera. I stepped to the side of the road and was just putting my foot into the bushes when Mrs. Martin fairly shrieked, "Snakes! Don't come back!" I could see that she was really anguished, feeling rather casual about it. I explained that we had plenty of rattlesnakes and so forth in Texas, but there was hardly one under every leaf out there. She answered, "Very likely not, but these are crates and cobras." I was duly respectful immediately. I've heard that if a crate strikes, it is instant death and there's nothing that can save you. So I stood in the road and got pretty good pictures. The common lantana of the hill country grows here in wild profusion, like a hedge, long frond, 8 or 10 feet tall, but the same little flowerets. They told me about kapok trees, from which that familiar pillow stuffing is made, and tokays, enormous lizards that make a sort of a singing sound at dusk. Tokay, tokay, but are even more frightening than the snakes. We stopped at one of the Buddhist temples, and I approached it. At the corners of the roof were the little points going skyward, like the tails of snakes. Mrs. Martin told me it had something to do with our myth of the flood. That seems to be a universal folk myth, cropping up in civilization after civilization. The temple itself appeared to be made out of an infinite number of tiny pieces of tile, orange on top, green shiny ones and blue ones in a design along the walls. It was very open, almost like a pavilion or summer house. I saw a monk in his bright orange costume. He paid me absolutely no attention. And there was a big, fat, plaster Buddha grinning amiably under a little pagoda roof with some incense burning in front of him. It was indeed the most exotic landscape and country I have ever seen. On the way back to the main road, we stopped right by one of the little teak houses. There was an assortment of small, naked children, some with shirts but no pants, running around. It had a thatched roof, a boat, some fishing gear stacked alongside. I have no idea what sanitary facilities, none evident. And beside each house, two or three of the big clay jars, about 4 feet high, in which they catch rainwater. That is our drinking supply. On the way back, I said, "Stop, there's a monkey on the little wall." Sure enough, it was a gray monkey with a long tail right beside the road. I got out and took his picture. And several of his friends came and joined him and hopped along beside him, perching on the little wall. For a while, Mrs. Martin told me they didn't bother the people, and the people didn't bother them. And then when I turned to get in the car, one almost followed me inside. I felt, this is my most adventurous day. I'm closest to the life of this land than I've been anywhere. When we got back to the house, Lyndon was asleep. At any rate, his room was dark and quiet. Mrs. Martin had presented me with a wonderful adventure, and I decided I would take advantage of it. Air Marshal Dawi and his wife, Kunying Ari, owned an island just a few minutes by helicopter from the guest house where we were. They had glass-bottomed boats and a good sand beach. Would I like to go? In a few minutes, Ashton and I and Mrs. Martin were winging our way over the countryside where we could see dark green hummocks. They were mango trees, I was told, and then what looked like a series of little white moles on the face of the earth, and more of the tapioca being gathered and swept into piles. It was used for glue, Mrs. Martin told me, as well as a foodstuff. And then we were out over the Gulf of Siam, looking down at the fish traps, the beautiful deep blue of the water. We landed on Crystal Island on top of a heavily wooded hill, and there they were, smiling and glad to meet us. Kunying Ari, dressed in a bathing suit, looking like any American family having their afternoon off at the beach. We walked down the hill, past that little vacation cottage, airy and open, almost covered with lovely bougainvillea vine, through a grove of trees to a sandy beach. There were innumerable dogs and some cats picking their way around, and even some chickens. I heard a rooster crow. Marshal Dawi had a glass-bottomed boat. He and Kunying Ari and Ashton and I took our seats on opposite sides of the boat and looked down through the glass into a forest of coral, an underwater jungle of branches and cathedrals and spirals, but they were all gray or white. I'm ruined forever by Caneel Bay. There were no bright-colored fish doing a ballet among the coral. A steward passed a tray, fruit juice and beer and snacks, most of them unrecognizable items. I stuck to the beer. Presently, we came back to the island. There was a cabana right on the beach, and Kunying Ari asked me to come in and try one of her swimming suits and have a swim in the Gulf of Siam. They were relaxed and genial hosts, and I felt like I knew them better than nearly anybody I had met on this trip. The water was very salt. You could float without trying, and calm little surf. Very lulling. I swam far out toward a shrimp boat. It had eyes and a face painted on the front of it. All the boats this afternoon in the little fishing village had faces painted on the front, some of them quite fearsome. But it's an amusing gay custom. They looked like a school of fish. Ashton and Kunying Ari stayed close to the beach. But Marshal Dawi followed me, pushing a rubber float chair. And when I was almost to the boat, I turned around and got in the chair, and he pushed me back to the shore. How unbelievable, having a swim in the Gulf of Siam at sunset with a companion named Dawi. I asked him about the white mounds that had looked like moles on the face of the earth, and he told me they were Chinese burial grounds, that the Chinese buried their dead close to the sea, back on the beach, and it was a lovely, white, clean, sandy beach. I changed into my clothes, but walked barefooted. The sand felt so good. Servants had built a fire right out on the sand and were cooking shish kebabs, beef and tomatoes and onions and peppers on long skewers. They were delicious. And there was a huge table of fresh seafood that had been swimming around just a few hours ago in the Gulf. Big, delicious shrimp, crab claws, and something I suspected of being octopus. I was determined to sample everything. And it was all good. And then Marshal Dawi asked me if I would sign in cement. That is what we always do with the guests at the ranch, I told him. So they took our picture while we did it. Only here, I put first my hands and then my feet and my name. But it was time to go home. Lyndon must be wondering what had happened to me. This had been my most personal, romantic, close to the land day on this whole trip. We said goodbye and climbed the hill and flew home over the sunset sea, looking down at the fish traps that looked like long arrows in the calm sea, and the boats that were painted, and the great billows of pink clouds that gradually faded into gray and then into night and stars. It was as beautiful a sunset as I ever remember. And then we were back at the Florida-like house. Lyndon was awake and ready for dinner. We called Lloyd and Marvin and Jake and Marie. And we had the best meal of our whole trip. Wonderful steaks and coconut ice cream with pineapple. I took a last look at the garden with its frangipani and orchids and lowly periwinkle and roses. How unexpected in this climate. The orchids and the coconut shells the housekeeper had placed for us in the rock garden. And then at 9 o'clock, oh luxury, we were in bed, a very low bed, about a foot off the floor. And the furniture could have been from any Florida hotel. And the day was such a mixture of the exotic and the familiar that I shall never forget it.